CHAP. 3. The cruelty of THE sacrifices TOTHEGODS. Well, now, let us say in addition, what inhuman demons, and hostile to the human race, your gods were, not only delighting in the insanity of men, but gloating over human slaughter, now in the armed contests for superiority in the stadia, and now in the numberless contests for renown in the wars, providing for themselves the means of pleasure, that they might be able abundantly to satiate themselves with the murder of human beings. And now, like plagues invading cities and nations, they demanded cruel oblations. Thus Aristomenes the Mycenaean slew 300 human beings in honor of Itometon Zeus, thinking that hecatombs of such a number and quality would give good omens, among whom was Theopompus, king of the Lacedaemonians, a noble victim. The Taurians, the people who inhabit the Tauric Chersonese, sacrificed to the Tauric Artemis forthwith whatever strangers they lay hands on their coasts, who have been east to drift on the sea. These sacrifices Euripides represents in tragedies on the stage. Monimus relates, in his treatise on marvels, that at Pella, in Thessaly, a man of Achaia was slain and sacrificed to Peleus and Chiron, that the Lictii, who are a Cretan race, slew men and sacrificed to Zeus, and took lies shows in his homeward journeys, and that the Lesbians offered the like sacrifice to Dionysus, is said by Tocidas. The Phocians also, for I will not pass over such, as they are, Pythocles informs us in his third book, on Concord, offer man, as a burnt sacrifice to the Taurian Artemis. Erechtheus of Attica and Marius the Roman too, sacrificed their daughters, the former to Phaerephata, as Demaratus mentions in his first book on tragic streets, the latter to the evil-averting deities, as Dorotheus relates in his first book of Italian affairs, philanthropic, assuredly, the demons appear, from these examples. And how shall those who revere the demons not be correspondingly pious? The former are called by the fair name of saviors, and the latter ask for safety from those who plot against their safety, imagining that they sacrifice with good omens to them, and forget that they themselves are slaying men. For a murder does not become a sacrifice by being committed in a particular spot. You are not to call it a sacred sacrifice if one slays a man, either at the altar, or on the highway to Artemis or Zeus, any more than if he slew him for anger or covetousness. Other demons vary like the former, but a sacrifice of this kind is murder and human butchery. Then why is it, O man, wisest of all creatures, that you avoid wild beasts and get out of the way of the savage animals if you fall in with a bear or lion? As when some traveler spies, coiled, in his path upon the mountainside, a deadly snake, back he recoils in haste, his limbs all trembling, and his cheek all pale. 3. But though you perceive and understand demons to be deadly and wicked, plotters, haters of the human race, and destroyers, why do you not turn out of their way, or turn them out of yours? What truth can the wicked tell, or what good can they do anyone? I can then readily demonstrate that man is better than these gods of yours, who are but demons, and can show, for instance, that Cyrus and Solon were superior to oracular Apollo. Your Phoebus was a lover of gifts, but not a lover of men. He betrayed his friend Croesus, and forgetting the reward he had got, so careful was he of his fame, led him across the Halles, to the stake. The demons love men in such a way as to bring them to the fire unquenchable. But O man, who lovest the human race better, and art truer than Apollo, pity him that is bound on the pyre. Do thou, O Solon, declare truth, and thou, O Cyrus, command the fire to be extinguished. Be wise, then, at last, O Croesus, taught by suffering. He whom you worship is an ingrate, he accepts your reward, and after taking the gold plays false. Look again to the end, O Solon. It is not the demon, but the man, that tells you this. It is not ambiguous oracles that Solon utters. You shall easily take them up. Nothing but true, O barbarian, shall you find by proof this oracle to be, when you are placed on the pyre. Whence I cannot help wondering, by what plausible reasons those who first went astray were impelled to preach superstition to men, when they exhorted them to worship wicked demons, whether it was Phoronois or Merops, or whoever else that raised temples and altars to them, and besides, as is fabled, were the first to offer sacrifices to them. But, unquestionably, in succeeding ages men invented for themselves gods to worship. It is beyond doubt that the Eros, who is said to be among the oldest of the gods, was worshipped by no one till Charmus took a little boy, and raised an altar to him in Academia, a thing more seemly, and the lust he had gratified, and the lewdness of vice men called by the name of Eros, deifying thus unbridled lust, The Athenians, again, knew not who Pan was till Philippides told them. Superstition, then, as was to be expected, having taken its rise thus, became the fountain of insensate wickedness, and not being subsequently checked, but having gone on augmenting, and rushing along in full flood, it became the originator of many demons, and was displayed in sacrificing hecatombs, appointing solemn assemblies, setting up images, and building temples, which were in reality tombs, for I will not pass these over in silence, but make a thorough exposure of them, though called by the august name of temples, that is, the tombs which got the name of temples. But do ye now at length quite give up your superstition, feeling ashamed to regard sepulchres with religious veneration? In the temple of Athene in Larissa, on the Acropolis, is the grave of Acrisius, and at Athens, on the Acropolis, is that of Cecrops, as Antiocho says in the 9th book of his histories. What of Erichthonius? Was he not buried in the temple of Peleus, and Amaris, the son of Oimalpas and Deira, were they not buried in the precincts of the Eleusinium, which is under the Acropolis? And the daughters of Zelus, were they not interred in Eleusis? Why should I enumerate to you the wives of the Hyperboreans? They were called Hyperoch and Laodice. They were buried in the Artemisium in Delos, which is in the temple of the Delian Apollo. Leontius says that Clearchus was buried in Miletus, in the Didymaeum, following the Mindian Zeno. It were unsuitable in this connection to pass over the sepulchre of Leucophron, who was buried in the temple of Artemis in Magnesia, or the altar of Apollo in Telmessus, which is reported to be the tomb of Telmisius the seer. Further, Ptolemy the son of Agesarchus, in his first book about Philopater, says that Cinyras and the descendants of Cinyras were interred in the temple of Aphrodite in Paphos. But all time would not be sufficient for me, were I to go over the tombs which are held sacred by you. And, if no shame for these audacious impieties steals over you, it comes to this, that you are completely dead, putting, as really you do, your trust in the dead. Poor wretches, what misery is this you suffer? Your heads are enveloped in the darkness of night. 2. Chap. 4. The absurdity and the shamefulness of the images by which the gods are worshipped. If, in addition, I take and set before you for inspection these very images, you will, as you go over them, find how truly silly is the custom in which you have been reared, of worshipping the senseless works of men as hands. Anciently, then, the Scythians worshipped their sabers, the Arabs stones, the Persians rivers, and some, belonging to other races still more ancient, set up blocks of wood in conspicuous situations, and erected pillars of stone, which were called zona, from the carving of the material of which they were made. The image of Artemis in Icarus was doubtless unwrought wood, and that of the Citheronian here was a felled tree trunk, and that of the Samian here, as Aetius says, was at first a plank, and was afterwards during the government of Proclus carved into human shape. And when the zona began to be made in the likeness of men, they got the name of Brete, a term derived from Brotos, man. In Rome, the historian Varro says that in ancient times the Zoron of Mars, the idol by which he was worshipped, was a spear. Artists not having yet applied themselves to this specious pernicious art, but when art flourished, error increased, that of stones and stocks and, to speak briefly, of dead mat you have made images of human form, by which you have produced a counterfeit of piety, and slandered the truth, is now as clear as can be. But such proof as the point made amend must not be declined. That the statue of Zeus at Olympia, and that of Peleus at Athens, were executed of gold and ivory by Phidias, is known by everybody. And that the image of Hera in Samos was formed by the chisel of Heoclides, Olympichus relates in his Samyaka. Do not, then, entertain any doubt that of the gods called at Athens venerable, Scopus made two of the stone called Lycnus, and Kalos the one which they are reported to have had placed between them, as Polemon shows in the 4th of his books addressed to Timaeus. Nor need you doubt respecting the images of Zeus and Apollo at Patara, in Lycia, which Phidias executed, as well as the lions that recline with them. And if, as some say, they were the work of Brisus, I do not dispute, you have in him another maker of images. Whichever of these you like, write down. Furthermore, the statues 9 cubits in height of Poseidon and Amphitrite, worshipped in Tenos, are the work of Telesius the Athenian, as we are told by Philochorus. Demetrius, in the 2nd book of his Argolics, writes of the image of Hera in Tiryns, both that the material was pear tree, and the artist was Argus. Many, perhaps, may be surprised to learn that the Palladium which is called the Diapades, that is, fallen from heaven, which Diomede and Ulysses are related to have carried off from Troy and deposited at Demophon, was made of the bones of Pelops, as the Olympian Jove of other bones those of the Indian wild beast. I adduce as my authority Dionysius, who relates this in the fifth part of his cycle. And Apelles, in the Delphics, says that there were two Palladia, and that both were fashioned by men. But that one may suppose that I have passed over them through ignorance, I shall add that the image of Dionysus Moricus at Athens was made of the stones called Philata, and was the work of Simon the son of Apollamo, as Polymo says in a letter. There were also two other sculptors of Crete, as I think they were called Scylus and Dipinus, and these executed the statues of the Dioscurean Argos, and the image of Hercules in Tiryns, and the effigy of the Munichian Artemis in Sicyon. Why should I linger over these, when I can point out to you the great deity himself, and show you who he was, whom indeed, conspicuously above all, we hear to have been considered worthy of veneration? Him they have dared to speak of as made without hands, I mean the Egyptian Serapis, for some relate that he was sent as a present by the people of Sinope to Ptolemy Philadelphus, king of the Egyptians, who won their favor by sending them corn from Egypt, when they were perishing with famine, and that this idol was an image of Pluto, and Ptolemy, having received the statue, placed it on the promontory which is now called Rhacotis, where the temple of Serapis was held in honor, and the secret enclosure borders on the spot, and that Blistyches the courtesan having died in Canopus, Ptolemy had her conveyed there and buried beneath the forementioned shrine. Others say that the Serapis was a Ponticidal and was transported with solemn pomp to Alexandria. Isidore alone says that it was brought from the Seleucians near Antioch, who also had been visited with a dearth of corn and had been fed by Ptolemy. But Athenodorus, the son of Sandon, while wishing to make out the Serapis to be ancient, has somehow slipped into the mistake of proving it to be an image fashioned by human hands. He says that Sesostris, the Egyptian king, having subjugated the most of the Hellenic races, on his return to Egypt brought a number of craftsmen with him. Accordingly, he ordered a statue of Osiris, his ancestor, to be executed in sumptuous style, and the work was done by the artist Bryoxi, not the Athenian, but another of the same name, who employed in its execution a mixture of various materials. For he had filings of gold and silver and lead, and in addition, tin, and of Egyptian stones not one was wanting, and there were fragments of sapphire, and hematite, and emerald, and topaz. Having ground down and mixed together all these ingredients, he gave to the composition a blue color, whence the darkish hue of the image, and having mixed the whole with the coloring matter that was left over from the funeral of Osiris and Apis, molded the Serapis, the name of which points to its connection with sepulture and its construction from funeral materials, compounded, as it is, of Osiris and Apis, which together make Osirapis. Another new deity was added to the number with great religious pomp in Egypt, and was near being so in Greece, by the king of the Romans, who deified Antinous, whom he loved as Zeus loved Ganymede, and whose beauty was of a very rare order, for lust is not easily restrained, destitute as it is of fear, and men now observe the secret nights of Antinous, the shameful character of which the lover, who spent them with him, knew well. Why reckon him among the gods, who is honored on account of uncleanness, and why do you command him to be lamented as a son, and why should you enlarge on his beauty? Beauty blighted by vice is loathsome. Do not play the tyrant, O man, over beauty, nor offer foul insult to youth in its bloom. Keep beauty pure, that it may be truly fair. Speaking over beauty, not its tyrant, remain free, and then I shall acknowledge thy beauty. Because thou hast kept its image pure, then will I worship that true beauty which is the archetype of all who are beautiful. Now the grave of the debauched boy is the temple and town of Antinous. For just as temples are held in reverence, so also are sepulchres, and pyramids, and mausoleums, and labyrinths, which are temples of the dead, as the others are sepulchres of the gods. As teacher on this point, I shall produce to you the Sibyl prophetess, not the oracular Lia of Phoebus, whom silly men called god, and falsely termed prophet, but the oracles of the great god, who was not made by men's hands, like dumb idols of sculptured stone. 1. She also predicts the ruin of the temple, foretelling that that of the Ephesian Artemis would be engulfed by earthquakes and rents in the ground, as follows. Prostrate on the ground, Ephesus shall wail, weeping by the shore, and seeking a temple that has no longer an inhabitant. She says also that the temple of Isis and Serapis would be demolished and burned. Isis, thrice wretched goddess, thou shalt linger by the streams of the Nile solitary, frenzied, silent, on the sands of Acheron. Then she proceeds. And thou, Serapis, covered with a heap of white stones, shalt lay a huge ruin in thrice wretched Egypt. But if you attend not to the prophetess, hear at least your own philosopher, the Ephesian Heraclitus, upbraiding images with their senselessness, and to these images they pray, with the same result, as if one were to talk to the walls of his house. For are they not to be wondered at who worship stones, and place them before the doors, as if capable of activity? They worship Hermes, as a god, and place Agia, as a doorkeeper. For if people upbraid them with being devoid of sensation, why worship them as gods? And if they are thought to be endowed with sensation, why place them before the door? The Romans, who ascribed their greatest successes to Fortune, and regarded her as a very great deity, took her statue to the privy, and erected it there, assigning to the goddess, as a fitting temple, the necessary, but senseless wood and stone, and rich gold, care not a whir for either savory odor, or blood, or smoke, by which, being at once honored and fumigated, they are blackened, no more do they for honor or insult, and these images are more worthless than any animal. I am at a loss to conceive how objects devoid of sense were deified, and feel compelled to pity as miserable wretches those that wander in the mazes of this folly. For if some living creatures have not all the senses, as worms and caterpillars, and such as even from the first appear imperfect, as moles, and the shrew mouse, which Nicander says is blind and uncouth, yet are they superior to those utterly senseless idols and images, for they have some one sense, say, for example, hearing, or touching, or something analogous to smell or taste, while images do not possess even one sense. There are many creatures that have neither sight, nor hearing, nor speech, such as the genus of oysters, which yet live, and grow, and are affected by the changes of the moon. But images, being motionless, inert, and senseless, are bound, nailed, glued, are melted, filed, sawed, polished, carved. The senseless earth is dishonored by the makers of images, who change it by their art from its proper nature and inducement to worship it. And the makers of gods worship not gods and demons, but in my view earth and art, which go to make up images. For, in sooth, the image is only dead matter shaped by the craftsman's hand. But we have no sensible image of sensible matter, but an image that is perceived by the mind alone, God, who alone is truly God. 1. And again, when involved in calamities, the superstitious worshippers of stones, though they have learned by the event that senseless matter is not to be worshipped, yet, yielding to the pressure of misfortune, become the victims of their superstition, and though despising the images, yet not wishing to appear holy to neglect them, are found fault with by those gods by whose names the images are called. For Dionysius the tyrant, the younger, having stripped off the golden mantle from the statue of Jupiter in Sicily, ordered him to be clothed in a woolen one, remarking facetiously that the latter was better than the golden one, being lighter in summer and warmer in winter. And Antiochus of Cyzicus, being in difficulties for money, ordered the golden statue of Zeus, 15 cubits in height, to be melted, and one like it, of less valuable material, plated with gold, to be erected in place of it. And the swallows and most birds fly to these statues, and void their excrement on them, paying no respect either to Olympian Zeus, or Adorian Asclepius, or even to Athene Pleius, or the Egyptian Serapis, but not even from them have you learned the senselessness of images. 1. But it has happened that miscreants or enemies have assailed and set fire to temples, and plundered them of their votive gifts, and melted even the images themselves, from base greed of gain. And if a Cambyses or a Darius, or any other madman, has made such attempts, and if one has killed the Egyptian Apis, I laugh at him killing their god, while pained at the outrage being perpetrated for the sake of gain. I will therefore willingly forget such villainy, looking on acts like these more as deeds of covetousness, and as a proof of the impotence of idols. But fire and earthquakes are shrewd enough not to feel shy or frightened at either demons or idols, any more than at pebbles heaped by the waves on the shore. I know fire to be capable of exposing and curing superstition. If thou art willing to abandon this folly, the element of fire shall light thy way. The same fire burned the temple in Argos, with Croesus the priestess, and that of Artemis in Ephesus the second time after the Amazons, and the capital in Rome was often wrapped in flames, nor did the fire spare the temple of Serapis, in the city of the Alexandrians. At Athens it demolished the temple of the Eleutherian Dionysus, and, as to the temple of Apollo at Delphi, first a storm assailed it, and then the discerning fire utterly destroyed it. This is told as the preface of what the fire promises, and the makers of images, do they not shame those of you, who are wise into despising matter? The Athenian Phidias inscribed on the finger of the Olympian Jove Pentarchus I, is beautiful. It was not Zeus that was beautiful in his eyes, but the man he loved. And Praxiteles, as Posidippus relates in his book about Nidus, when he fashioned the statue of Aphrodite of Nidus, made it like the form of Crane, of whom he was enamored, that the miserable people might have the paramour of Praxiteles to worship. And when Rhine the courtesan, the thespian, was in her bloom, all the painters made their pictures of Aphrodite copies of the beauty of Rhine, as, again, the sculptors at Athens made their Mercuries, like Alcibiades. It remains for you to judge whether you ought to worship COU artisans. Moved, as I believe, by such facts, and despising such fables, the ancient kings unblushingly proclaimed themselves gods, as this involved no danger from men, and thus taught that on account of their glory they were made immortal. So, the son of Aeolus was styled Zeus, by his wife Alcyone. Alcyone, again, being by her husband styled Hera. Ptolemy IV was called Dionysus, and Mithridates of Pontus was also called Dionysus, and Alexander wished to be considered the son of Ammon, and to have his statue made horned by the sculptors eager to disgrace the beauty of the human form by the addition of a horn. And not kings only, but private persons dignified themselves with the names of deities, as Menecrates the physician, who took the name of Zeus. What need is there for me to incense Alexarchus? He, having been by profession a grammarian, assumed the character of the sun god, as Aristus of Salamis relates. And why mention Nicagoras? He was a native of Zela in Pontus, and lived in the days of Alexander. Nicagoras was styled Hermes, and used the dress of Hermes, as he himself testifies. And whilst whole nations, and cities, with all their inhabitants, sinking into self-flattery, treat the myths about the gods with contempt, at the same time men themselves, assuming the air of equality with the gods, and being puffed up with vainglory, vote themselves extravagant honors. There is the case of the Macedonian Philip of Pella, the son of Amintor, to whom they decreed divine worship in Kinosaurus, although his collarbone was broken, and he had a lame leg, and had one of his eyes knocked out. And again that of Demetrius, who was raised to the rank of the gods, and where he alighted from his horse on his entrance into Athens is the temple of Demetrius the Alighter, and altars were raised to him everywhere, and nuptials with Athene assigned to him by the Athenians, but he disdained the goddess, as he could not marry the statue, and taking the courtesan Lamia, he ascended the Acropolis, and lay with her on the couch of Athene, showing to the old virgin the postures of their young courtesan. There is no cause for indignation, then, at Hippo, who immortalized his own death, for this Hippo ordered the following elegy to be inscribed on his tomb. This is the sepulchre of Hippo, whom destiny made, through death, equal to the immortal gods. Well done, Hippo, thou showest to us the delusion of men. If they did not believe thee speaking, now that thou art dead, let them become thy disciples. This is the oracle of Hippo, let us consider it. The objects of your worship were once men, and in process of time died, and fable and time have raised them to honor. For somehow, what is present is wont to be despised through familiarity, but what is past, being separated through the obscurity of time from the temporary censure that attached to it, is invested with honor by fiction, so that the present is viewed with distrust, the past with admiration. Exactly in this way is it, then, that the dead men of antiquity, being reverenced through the long prevalence of delusion respecting them, are regarded as gods by posterity. As grounds of your belief in these, there are your mysteries, your solemn assemblies, bonds, and wounds, and weeping deities. Woe, woe, that fate decrees my best beloved, Sarpedon, by Patroclus' hand to fall. 2. The will of Zeus was overruled, and Zeus, being worsted, laments for Sarpedon. With reason, therefore, have you yourselves called them shades and demons, since Homer, paying Athene, and the other divinities in Astronor, has styled them demons. She her heavenward course pursued to join the immortals in the abode of Jove. 3. How, then, Can shades and demons be still reckoned gods, being in reality unclean and impure spirits, acknowledged by all to be of an earthly and watery nature, sinking downwards by their own weight, and flitting about graves and tombs, about which they appear dimly, being but shadowy phantasms? Such things are your gods, shades and shadows, and to these add those maimed, wrinkled, squinting divinities the Lethe, daughters of Thersites rather than of Zeus. So that by unwittily, as I think says, how in reason could man praise Zeus for a beautiful progeny, a thing he could not obtain for himself? The incorruptible being, as far as in you lies, you sink in the earth, and that pure and holy essence you have buried in the grave, robbing the divine of its true nature. Why, I pray you, have you assigned the prerogatives of God to what are no gods? Why, let me ask, have you forsaken heaven to pay divine honor to earth? What else is gold, or silver, or steel, or iron, or brass, or ivory, or precious stones? Are they not earth, and of the earth? Are not all these things which you look on the progeny of one mother the earth? Why, then, foolish and silly men, for I will repeat it, have you, defaming the supercelestial region, dragged religion to the ground, by fashioning to yourselves gods of earth, and by going after those created objects instead of the uncreated deity, have sunk into deepest darkness? The Parian stone is beautiful, but it is not yet Poseidon. The ivory is beautiful, but it is not yet the Olympian Zeus. Matter always needs art to fashion it, but the deity needs nothing. Art has come forward to do its work, and the matter is clothed with its shape, and while the preciousness of the material makes it capable of being turned to profitable account, it is only on account of its form that it comes to be deemed worthy of veneration. Thine image, if considered as to its origin, is gold, it is wood, it is stone, it is earth, which has received shape from the artist's hand. But I have been in the habit of walking on the earth, not of worshipping it. For I hold it wrong to entrust my spirit as hopes to things destitute of the breath of life. We must therefore approach as close as possible to the images. How peculiarly inherent deceit is in them, is manifest from their very look. For the forms of the images are plainly stamped with the characteristic nature of demons. If one go round and inspect the pictures and images, he will at a glance recognize your gods from their shameful forms: Dionysus, from his robe Hephaestus, from his art Demeter, from her calamity Ino, from her headdress Poseidon, from his trident Zeus, from the swan the pyre indicates Heracles. And if one sees a statue of a naked woman, without an inscription, he understands it to be the golden Aphrodite. Thus that Cyprian Pygmalion became enamored of an image of ivory. The image was Aphrodite, and it was nude. The Cyprian is made a conquest of by the mere shape, and embraces the image. This is related by Philos to Faunus. A different Aphrodite in Nidus was of stone, and beautiful. Another person became enamored of it, and shamefully embraced the stone. Posidippus relates this. The former of these authors, in his book on Cyprus, and the latter in his book on Nidus. So powerful is art to delude, by seducing amorous men into the pit. Art is powerful, but it cannot deceive reason, nor those who live agreeably to reason. The doves on the picture were represented so to the life by the painter's art, that the pigeons flew to them, and horses have neighed to well-executed pictures of mares. They say that a girl became enamored of an image, and a comely youth of the statue at Nidus. But it was the eyes of the spectators that were deceived by art, for no one in his senses ever would have embraced a goddess, or entombed himself with a lifeless paramour, or become enamored of a demon and a stone. But it is with a different kind of spell that art deludes you. If it leads you not to the indulgence of amorous affections, it leads you to pay religious honor and worship to images and pictures. The picture is like, well and good, let art receive its meed of praise, but let it not deceive man by passing itself off for truth. The horse stands quiet, the dove flutters not, its wing is motionless. But the cow of Daedalus, made of wood, allured the savage bull, and art having deceived him, compelled him to meet a woman full of licentious passion. Such frenzy have mischief-working arts created in the minds of the insensate. On the other hand, apes are admired by those who feed and care for them, because nothing in the shape of images and girls' ornaments of wax or clay deceives them. You then will show yourselves inferior to apes by cleaving to stone, and wood, and gold, and ivory images, and to pictures. Your makers of such mischievous toys, the sculptors and makers of images, the painters and workers in metal, and the poets, have introduced a motley crowd of divinities. In the fields, satyrs, and pans; in the woods, nymphs, and oreads, and hamadryads; and besides, in the waters, the rivers, and fountains, the naiads; and in the sea, the nereids, And now the Magi boast that the demons are the ministers of their impiety, reckoning them among the number of their domestics, and by their charms compelling them to be their slaves. Besides, the nuptials of the deities, their begetting, and bringing forth of children, that are recounted, their adultery celebrated in song, their carousals represented in comedy, and bursts of laughter over their cups, which your authors introduce, urge me to cry out, though I would fain be silent. O the godlessness! You have turned heaven into a stage, the divine has become a drama, and what is sacred you have acted in comedies, under the masks of demons, travestying true religion by your demon worship superstition.